With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the second two-pack of Strictly Hoop Talk Division previews. If you're just catching up, last week I dropped the Atlantic and Pacific Division preview podcast, just covering the teams that are going into the bubble. And this two-pack will be right now the one you're hearing, which is the Southeast Division preview with Philip Rossman-Rake of Locked On Magic. And then for the Central Division podcast, I have my guy James Edwards III of The Athletic returning back to the podcast. Very excited for that. So both of these podcasts will be released simultaneously. I'm not sure which order they will appear on the feed. It all depends on how fast the platform processes it, but that's what's coming. And then of course, before the end of this week, you will have the final two divisions, which are the Northwest, and the Southwest Division previews. So all of those will be coming to you. And I'm very excited for the Southwest Division preview because that will have all five bubble teams, all five teams are going to the bubble. So that will be an interesting one. And for those of you that are waiting for some Strictly Hip Hop content, don't worry, some is on the way. I got a very big podcast coming. It's going to be a conglomeration. It's going to be a panel of a lot of great hip-hop minds coming together. I've been spending weeks organizing this, structuring this, and figuring it out, and the concept is really dope, so I don't want to give too much away right now, but just know that I got some awesome hip-hop content coming very, very soon. And one last thing before I get this introduction ended, just please follow me on all of the social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram. Those are the best ones to keep up with my content, what's coming, and all of that. So at Real Chris Platy, ChrisPlatte. I know you know how to spell real. And without further ado, man, let's get to these division previews. This is the Southeast Division preview with my guy, Philip Rossman-Rake of Locked On Magic. Hope you enjoy it. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Strictly Hoop Talk. As always, I'm your host, Chris Platy. Basketball is back, and so you know I had to bring back my guy for this division preview, the Southeast Division preview, the king of Southeast Division previews on this podcast, my man Philip Rossman-Rake, site expert and editor at the Orlando Magic Daily and host of the Locked On Magic. Philip, how you doing?
I am doing all right. Getting by, as always.
Yeah, man, isn't that the truth in these times? Isn't that the truth? Getting by is the perfect answer for these times. But basketball is coming back, and man, I said this on the last couple podcasts. I've been prepping for these podcasts, and just kind of like, I feel like I've fully processed the fact that basketball is coming back now, and it's just gotten me in a good state. Like, I'm really excited and looking forward to basketball coming back.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been welcome to have practices and to, you know, see the guys, and, you know, some of the videos we're getting from inside the campus at Disney are certainly a lot of fun. So it's good to have the NBA back in all of its glory.
Yeah, all of its glory. So for this division, there's two teams that are not joining the bubble, the Atlanta Hawks and the Charlotte Hornets, so we will not be speaking about them. We'll be speaking about the Washington Wizards, the Orlando Magic, and the Miami Heat during this podcast. I haven't decided yet what I'm going to do talking about the eight non-bubble teams, but for these division previews, as you saw in the previous two that I uploaded, the fact that I have decided to skip the non-bubble teams and just focus on on the teams that are in the bubble and what's going on with them, and kind of a recap. So starting with the Washington Wizards, they are 24-40 on the season. They are 6.5 games back, or sorry, 5.5 games back of Orlando Magic for the eighth seed. Now they have quite the hill to climb. They were obviously among them and Phoenix were among the last teams to make the cut for the playoffs, or for the restart, that is. And with Bertans not going, Bradley Beal not going, John Wall obviously due to injury not going, I tried to come up with an interesting thought for this team, but really I'm struggling. You know, what is there to watch? I mean, if you're a Thomas Bryant guy, you can watch some Thomas Bryant, I guess. I mean, I don't particularly know. Washington has some interesting young players like Bonga are kind of interesting, but I mean, other than that, I mean, I don't expect this team to even come close to competing. Even with Brooklyn missing half of their roster, I still expect Washington to not be able to make the climb without Bradley Beal, without John Wall, without Bertans, who's arguably their second best player all season. How are you assessing Washington or looking at Washington coming back to this restart?
Yeah, it's going to be really tough. I mean, I think Washington had to make up a game and a half on Orlando to force a play-in series. And, you know, that was not impossible. But, you know, the Wizards were slated to have a very difficult schedule when, you know, if the season had finished normally. And, you know, their schedule is manageable compared to other teams. I think they definitely caught a break. But, you know, the only saving grace that Washington really had was Bradley Beal. And if, you know, especially as teams are trying to figure themselves out, you know, Bradley Beal as just a supreme scorer, a guy who can kind of shoot his team into games. Mm-hmm. That was really the only thing that concerned me about Washington as someone who follows the Magic was, you know, Bradley Beal gets hot and everyone's still figuring themselves out. Then all of a sudden, you know, Washington could be sitting with 3 wins and, you know, no win in this campus setting for a team, you know, that's under 500 like the Magic or the Wizards or the Nets or, you know, any of those teams in the Western Conference at the bottom of the standings. No one should be counting any game as a, you know, checkmark easy win. I mean, not right. Just for the fact that, you know, no one really knows what the play is going to look like when they start playing again. It's going to be really tough for Washington. And I think like Phoenix, you know, no offense to Phoenix, mm-hmm. like Phoenix, I think they're viewing these 8 seeding games as an opportunity to let their young players play and yep. get more experience and kind of get a leg up on maybe some of the other young teams that are sitting out. You know, that's why I think a lot of those other teams want some kind of mini camp or something in August just to kind of keep guys fresh. And not have this disadvantage. But, you know, the Wizards are going to give the ball a lot to, you know, Isaiah Thomas. You know, they're going to give the ball a lot to Rui Hachimura, Thomas Bryant. You know, they're missing, you know, Davis Bertans, one of the best three-point shooters in the league this year. Bradley Beal, one of the best scorers in the league this year. They're missing the two things that probably make them the most dangerous. And I think it's, you know, it's going to be really tough for Washington to make up the ground they need to make up.
Yeah. I agree, which is why that's actually kind of what we were talking about with Phoenix. I brought this up with Tim who did the Pacific Division preview with me, and when Tim and I were talking about Phoenix, you know, it was kind of along the same lines, right? This is an opportunity for the young guys to get their chance to get some extra reps in and like you said, get ahead of some of the other teams, younger teams that are not in this bubble. But the one thing I brought up, Philip, and I'll be curious to see your thoughts, is just that this situation is so unprecedented. The bubble, the just everything that's happening in even just the world right now outside of the coronavirus, obviously all the social issues with basketball coming back. I think that this is an environment where that could be very, very good for these young players, because how often do we see, Philip, in our time, we see these guys who they come out with the article where they're, you know, They're 27 years old, but this is the summer that they decided to cut out junk food and eat healthy, and then they start to prolong their careers. And now they're in this just isolated, strange world where they're doing nothing but basketball, and they got all these meals catered to them, which I know they normally do as professional athletes. But I feel like the situation that they're in now could really be a huge maturation experience for a lot of these young guys, on top of just the basketball side of it.
I mean, I think there is something to that. Just sitting in on some of the on the Orlando Magic's media availability since they got into the bubble, and they all see, you know, and the Magic are a relatively young team. I mean, Nikola Vucevic, Evan Fournier, Aaron Gordon, they're all under 30. They only have two players that are older than 30 years old at this point. They've all kind of talked about this being a business trip. I think the one thing that being on the campus setting might do for young teams is it cuts off all the, for lack of a better term, distraction.
Yeah.
I mean, you're literally there. You practice for 2 hours whenever you're scheduled to practice. You have your walkthroughs in the hotel ballroom, and then you're just kind of stuck with yourself. I mean, there's not much else for you to do. There's certainly some outings and entertainment options available within the campus setting, but
right.
You're very limited in what you can do. And so I think the potential there is certainly there that it's going to really narrow the focus on the task at hand and really put the focus on, I'm here to do a job. I'm really going to focus on building habits so I can do my job better, because, there is a sense that the field is opened up a little bit because nobody knows what it's going to look like when players start playing again. Like, nobody has any clue what that looks like. And so I think there's definitely a little bit of that going on, where potentially players can narrow their focus. But, the counterpoint to that is typically around this time of year, typically during an off season, you have the ability to work on your game and work on your individual self. And that's where you see a lot of players make the growth that turns them into star players. And they're not going to have that, obviously. Maybe the players that get eliminated earlier can get back to that work sooner, although it's not clear who will have access to team practice facilities like they normally would as well. But the offseason is going to be significantly shorter. I mean, we're talking maybe a month and a half, 2 months between the end of the finals and the beginning of training camp. And so that time is really constricted for young players to get better. And I think that's, so it's a double-edged sword in that sense. It might create better habits for in season, but I don't, I'm concerned a guy like Markel Fultz. Like, this is a summer where, Markel Fultz would be coming off his first full season in the NBA, his first fully healthy season in the NBA. I was expecting him to get in the lab, so to speak, in the off season and really improve his skills. It's hard to believe that's going to happen and that we'll see a significant leap from a player like a Markel Fultz or even like a Jonathan Isaac, because they won't have the full offseason to do so. And so it's certainly a double-edged sword on that front.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't really look at it from the perspective of the shortened offseason and how, you're right, the offseason is most of the time where you see the most growth for players, especially young players. So with it being a shortened off season, you're right. I think that can allow them to for it to be more difficult to grow in that sense. But I was just talking more from a pure habit standpoint and being in a situation where you are so focused on basketball, because there's really not there are some other entertainment options like you mentioned, and we saw videos of guys playing cornhole and all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, it's more about to me just being in a situation where you're almost solely focused on basketball, and it's teaching you the habits, it's teaching you the nuances of not only just eating healthy, but of putting X amount of time aside for film, or getting into, or just, putting this much more time in the gym, whatever it is, the weight room, etc. Like, whatever you got to do to make yourself a better player. So I think it's more about, to me, it was more along the lines of thinking from the habit standpoint and getting yourself into a more a more detailed and thorough regimen.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for young players on these teams, especially if they have a chance to make the playoffs, you know, I am a big believer that playoff and winning experience are extremely valuable.
Yep.
You know, even though, you know, players will not be going through kind of the atmosphere of a playoff series, going through the preparation and understanding what it takes to be, you know, focused on a playoff series, and the detail that it takes to win a playoff series. I mean, honestly, like, you know, the Magic hadn't been in the playoffs for 7 years until last season. I think that shocked a lot of the players on the Magic. They didn't understand, you know, the detail it takes to win a playoff season. Certainly they faced a tall task going up against the Raptors. And I think, you know, for them, this whole season is about getting back there and kind of seeing how far they've come in that understanding and that development. And, you know, you would hope that they'd be a tougher out this time around. And I know, you know, they want to see Mo Bamba go through that. They want to see Marco Fultz go through that. So, you know, I think there's still a lot of value in going through the process.
I agree with that. And you offered a perfect segue doing my job for me, allowing me to transition to the Orlando Magic here. So let's talk Orlando Magic. 30-35 on the season. The players not going are Jonathan Isaac due to injury, and like you told me before the podcast, there is an unnamed player that has tested positive for the coronavirus who will be joining the team shortly, and Markel Fultz, for personal reasons, is expected to also join the team shortly. My thought with Orlando is just, I was looking at a lot of their numbers because I was just like, all right, let me catch up on Orlando basketball. And I even watched some of their games, and the last 15 games, they've been fifth in offensive rating, 23rd in defensive rating, second in assist turnovers. They've been excellent rebounding the ball as well. They had, right before the season ended, they had their wins over Memphis and Houston. But in there, in that last 15, you also included some loss to the Knicks, a barely escaping win against the Pistons, who, as we know, are not necessarily a good team this season. So where are you at with Orlando coming back into the bubble?
Yeah, so, you know, Orlando was probably playing their best basketball of the season when the season was heading into a hiatus. They're actually hitting the soft part of the schedule. I mean, I think when the schedule came out, we all looked at it and said, March is where this team's going to make its run. You know, I think they had 8 of their next 10 at home and 10 of their next 12 against non-playoff teams or teams that were under 500. You know, this is a team that has proven throughout the year that it can beat the teams it's supposed to beat. You know, yes, there's some bad losses mixed in there, as mm-hmm. it is with all teams, but
yeah,
they only have 5 wins against teams with records better than 500. And so this was a really kind of, you know, if you know you're looking at the numbers, this has been a tough team to get a handle on. You know, they've had a lot of injuries. They've had to adjust on the fly a lot, and this is not a team really built to do that. They, you know, they have depth, but, you know, if they lose one of their key pillars, you know, the thing starts to wobble a little bit. But they were finally feeling healthy. They were finally looking good. They were finally picking up momentum when the season stopped. The big concern is their defense just hasn't been as good as it was last year. I believe they're 11th in the league in defensive rating this year, or 10th in the league now, actually, in defensive rating this year. So, you know, they still have a very good defense, but it was not as good as it was last year when they made their playoff run. And, you know, you mentioned how good the offense was after and around the All-Star break. The defense really fell off during that time, too. They kind of got sucked into, we can score with ease, we can outscore teams. But there were some signs that they were playing better. They played 3 really good quarters in Minnesota in a blowout win. They played 3 really mm-hmm. good defensive quarters in Houston in a blowout win. They had to come back from 16 down at Memphis to win that game. You can't do that without a really strong defensive effort. So, you know, there were signs that they were picking up, but, you know, it feels like you got to push all that to the side. You got to push everything that happened before, you know, the season went into hiatus. You know, we can use that as a reference, but with this Magic team, you know, I don't think they can count on the offense being the same as it was. You know, there's certainly going to be some tweaks that could mimic it a little bit. But this team has to get down and defend if it wants to accomplish anything this year. And that part has been spotty all season.
Yeah, I very much agree with that. That was my interesting thought, was the specifically the defense, because, you know, the offense did surprise me when I looked at the numbers. I was like, you know, it reminded me because I had watched a couple of Orlando games right before the season went into hiatus, and I was like, wow, like they look a lot better offensively. And then I went to check the numbers to see, you know, if that was just the eye test or where that was, and they were playing well offensively. But yeah, it was like you said, the defensive slip was interesting to me, because that is not only their calling card, but I think that's just what is necessary for them to be a playoff team and a good playoff team. Because last year was a very successful season for Orlando. You know, I mean, everybody remembers that win against Toronto in the first round, and that's huge to get a win in the first round of the playoffs. You know, obviously you want to build on that and maybe be more competitive this year in the first round, or maybe even have the chance to make it out of the first round this year. But the fact that they didn't just do what the Pistons did last year, and just essentially be four games of roadkill against Milwaukee, you know, the fact that they were able to hang with Toronto, and even in some of the next few games, they were able to be competitive. So they had a very successful season, and I'm very interested to see how they build upon that. And to me, it was always just defense was their calling card. Defense was what put them in positions to win a lot of games. And I think that them finding more offensive rhythm is a good thing, but they can't let it compromise their defense, because their defense was last year, they were just absolutely stellar defensively. And like you said, they've been kind of up and down roller coaster defensively this year. So that's been kind of my main focus for Orlando.
Yeah. And that's, you know, been the big concern. And you know, I think the Magic are, you know, Steve Clifford's very good at installing defenses, you know, in training camp. And so he's going to have the time, I think, to get their defense right. I think everyone around the league kind of understands that offense is going to be unreliable early on, especially as players get their rhythm and their timing and their conditioning back. And defense, you know, coaches will always tell you defense is the only thing you can control. You can always control your effort. You can always control your positioning. You can always control making it harder for the other team to score. I mean, yes, some guys are going to make tough shots, but if you force enough tough shots, they're not going to make enough of them to beat you. So, you know, I think a lot of the coaches, a lot of the elite coaches especially, are going to put the focus on the defensive end early on. And so the teams that are able to defend well, those are the teams that I think are going to find success when the season resumes. Now, obviously, these are the best teams in the league, so they're all going to be very, very good defensively. But it's definitely going to be a process for this team, for this Magic team, and for everyone, I think, to get their defense down pat. And you know, the one thing that's you know, this Magic defense isn't flashy. I mean, Jonathan Isaac was an all defensive team candidate before he got hurt. He is actually with the team in the campus setting, but is not expected to play. He's practicing and doing kind of the light stuff with the team at the moment, it looks like. But you know, they've always left the door slightly ajar, but unlikely that he'll play. He's really the only defensive playmaker on the team. You know, Aaron Gordon's a solid defender, but everything else is about positioning, timing, and just an understanding of the team defensive scheme. And so I think for the Magic, a reminder of all those things, it could help them kind of get themselves back in shape to defend at a higher level.
Yeah, that's a very good point about Jonathan Isaac. I like that you put the defense in that context, because that was also my takeaway, is that Jonathan Isaac's really the only one that's making the steal, or the block that leads to a fast break. Like that, those are the type of plays that Jonathan Isaac makes versus the rest of the team. Is just, like you said, sound defense, just in position. Boom, you waste 18, 20 seconds of the shot clock, and the team has to shoot a contested jump shot. You know, that's kind of what Orlando's defense has been all season. And so I'm very interested in Orlando, very, very interested to see what they do as far as like looking at the standings. I mean, unfortunately, it's impossible for them. I would love to see what if Orlando were able to, which they probably won't be able to due to the massive difference in standings, eclipse Philly or Indiana and become and face somebody that's not Milwaukee or Toronto in the first round, I would love to see what their team can do against any of the other remaining teams in the Eastern Conference playoffs. But if Orlando stays out of Milwaukee's way and even plays Toronto again, I'd be curious to even see that kind of matchup, a Toronto Raptors without Kawhi and Danny Green.
Yeah, and it definitely would be interesting. I would say the Magic's goal is to get to seventh. They're obviously a half game behind Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. They get two games with the Nets, so it feels like the Magic control their own destiny for their own success in the campus setting. Honestly, 3-4 wins probably gets you the seventh seed at this point. You know, I hate to play that game because we just don't know what things are going to look like. But the Magic certainly should feel like they're in a position to accomplish something, to gain something and play their way into the playoffs, which is something that Clifford talks about a lot. But it's going to take a lot of work and they got to do something that they haven't done all year. And that's beat quality teams. Like I said, the Magic only have 5 wins this year against teams with records better than 500. That is actually the fewest wins of any team in the campus setting. So this is a team that has struggled in these big games. You know, they're 0-3 this year against Toronto. They played one of those games without Nikola Vucevic. The other game he got hurt in. And then the other game, Jonathan Isaac had a crazy game. He had a career high that night. They lost all three of their matchups with Milwaukee. They've lost their 2 matchups with Boston to this point. You know, they've struggled with the elite teams at the top of the Eastern Conference, and those are the teams they're going to have to beat.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a number that makes a lot of sense. When I was looking at their previous 15, I was looking at, you know, okay, they're winning the Minnesota games, the Detroit games, the games that they're supposed to win, and they got some good wins in there, like Memphis and Houston. Those are good wins, but yeah, it was like, okay, well, they lost to Milwaukee. Okay, I understand. Milwaukee's Milwaukee. They lost to, you know, and it just was like looking at the list, Miami, and it's like, okay, all of these teams that I understand that those are the teams that are, I guess, theoretically supposed to win those games, but still the fact that consistently they're not coming out of those games victorious.
Yeah, and that's something the Magic have talked about all year long. I mean, they had a November game against the Indiana Pacers, and you know, players openly talked about, you know, the Pacers are the kind of team that we want to be, and they're in the spot we want to be in, and those are the games we have to win, because if we're gonna rank order ourselves in the Eastern Conference, if we're gonna take a step up into the 5-6 seed range, we're gonna have to beat those Pacers. We're gonna have to beat teams like the Pacers. And Indiana came into Orlando. It was a close game in the fourth quarter, and they could not miss in the fourth quarter. They were just hitting mid-range jumpers. They went to Indiana, I think maybe a week and a half later, got beaten Indiana again by a good fourth quarter from the Pacers. That's just the biggest example I can think of kind of the hill the Magic have struggled to climb over this year.
Yeah. Well said. Let's jump to Miami. Because I'm glad that we were actually able to, without the Hawks and Hornets, I'm glad that we were actually able to deep dive a little bit more into Orlando, and the same here with Miami, just because these are teams that are very interesting to me. So the Miami Heat now, 41-24, just darlings of the NBA right now. I mean, they were right before the season went down, everybody was talking about, well, could they beat, would Philly lose to them in the first round if it was a 4-5 matchup? Right now they have Indiana, but Indiana without Oladipo, you expect to, even though Oladipo was struggling and they played all season without him, you still expect Indiana to take some sort of step back, potentially. And I would assume my money would be on a Philly-Miami 4-5 matchup, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Indiana holds on to the 5 seed there. But Miami's now this team that's been kind of thrown into this, okay, are they somewhat contenders? What's their finals probability? That's been the jump that they've made, and then they made the trades obviously to get Jay Crowder and Andre Iguodala and kind of do some stuff that short term make them better, but also doesn't hinder them long term. And so that's where I want to go with Miami specifically, is the trade for Iguodala is come playoff time, which is what they got him for. What do we think Andre Iguodala will actually give them now? But now that he's had all of this time off, he's had basically two off seasons, or three off seasons, really, if you count the fact that he didn't play the majority of the year before he went to Miami. He's only played 14 games at this point. I mean, what is there to expect about Iguodala?
I mean, I think the big thing is just his veteran poise and leadership. You know, not that Miami needs a ton of that, because, you know, they have Jimmy Butler, who's been around the block a little bit. You know, Goran Dragic is certainly a solid veteran point guard, you know, coming off the bench for them. But, you know, having a guy who's got championship experience, like I am a big believer that you need veterans who've been there if you're serious about contending, that those guys can just impart wisdom and more than anything, kind of impart calm. And yeah, Eric Spoelstra as the coach can do that, because he's won championships before and is a fantastic coach. But, you know, Iguodala is someone that I think can exude calm. And especially, you know, no one's gone through what everyone's going through right now in the league. So having someone who, you know, knows what he's doing, can get down and do the work, and just project calm and poise, I think that's going to be really, really valuable, especially if a team is looking to kind of punch up its weight a little bit with the situation that everyone's in this campus setting, where, you know, no one, you know, it really does feel like more the doors open for more contenders to join the fray, just because nobody knows what status anyone is at. I mean, Iguodala wasn't playing fantastic for Miami, I would say. You know, I think that they definitely threw him in there, and he definitely needed some time to get his legs under him. And, you know, certainly he has to get, you know, learn Miami's system a little bit better and kind of integrate himself into what they're trying to do. But, you know, he is someone that could still prove very, very valuable, especially with the hiatus, honestly. You know, if he's physically ready, if he's physically capable, you know, he's someone that's going to be like, okay, this is how we kind of paced ourselves through the playoffs. This is, you know, how we dealt with, you know, this adversity in Golden State. That kind of calm, I think, really does, you know, matter to teams, especially young teams that are trying to find their way and compete in the playoffs, which, you know, Miami, while they do have some very nice veterans, they rely on a lot of young guys too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, most of their greatest contributors outside of Jimmy Butler are young guys, are the Kendrick Nunns, the Tyler Heroes, the Duncan Robinsons. And so I love to see Iguodala on that team for that specific reason. For everything you highlighted is very important. And to me, I wanted to look at, so I'm a big believer in that, in the veteran presence, and like you said, the ability to just calm a team. But I wanted to look at, once I got past that, I wanted to look at, okay, what statistically, like, where's he at? And yeah, you're right, he's less than what he was in his games at Golden State last year, but not by much. I mean, the 3-point percentage is slightly up, but he's shooting slightly less, so you got to figure it's around the same, which is right now it's 37.5%, but last year was 33%. You got to imagine it's within that range for him. Free throw shooting's the only real atrocious thing. He's only shooting 25%. But again, it's a small sample size of 14 games played and not a lot of minutes. But everywhere else, I mean, he's pretty much the same. I mean, points, he's down a little bit. He's down one assist. Like rebounding, the pretty much exact same. So he seems to be, from just the sheer numbers, he seems to be, as he's rounding into shape, you expect him to be pretty much what he was last year. And that was kind of my main wonder, was all season we were talking about Andre Iguodala. It was almost a sweepstakes for this guy. And so I was curious, as everyone was getting caught in the hype of Andre Iguodala and where was he going to go? I was wondering, how much is he actually going to give this year? You know, because last year I did notice a decline, and I was wondering if this year I would notice a decline as well. But so far, it seems like, assuming he stayed in shape and took care of his body and all that, it seems like he's going to, when he rounds into shape, he's going to be roughly the same player he was last year with minimal decline.
Yeah, and I think arguably the bigger player that Miami got in that trade was Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder played only 13 games at the Heat, but he played fantastic for Miami. He fits their ethos. He's hard-nosed defensive player. He can hit the three when he's open. You put him in the corner and he will knock down that three. Honestly, like, Iguodala has declined a lot. Athleticism is not quite what it used to be. I mean, he's 36 years old. I always kind of felt like teams like the idea of Iguodala more than the actual player he was or had become, not only is he 36, they went to the finals, 4 years in a row? That is a lot of extra mileage on him too. Let's not forget that, those playoff games add up and those are another season. Yeah. And so, getting Crowder was probably, if they don't get Crowder in that deal, the Heat are probably in a lot more trouble than they would otherwise be because they won the Iguodala sweepstakes. Getting Crowder, honestly, I think made that trade successful, and it's probably more the Jay Crowder trade than the Iguodala trade, although Iguodala certainly got all the headlines because, he's played for the championship team, and it seemed like a lot of teams were trying to get him. He held out for Memphis. But Crowder was a real player for them and really makes that team better. He's, good cog in the machine for this Miami team.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Jay Crowder because I mentioned him in passing in the trade and I did want to I see that Crowder is playing obviously a lot better and he's been essential for Miami so far in his short time, but I wanted to specifically dive on the Iguodala just because that was where the attention was, and so I wanted to say use this as an opportunity to really dive in on that aspect of it. Like, what exactly are we getting with Iguodala at this point? So I'm glad that you brought up Jay Crowder. What's your interesting thought of Miami going into this season?
I mean, just looking at their numbers, I mean, we always think of Miami as the strong defensive team. And what's interesting about Miami is this year they're not that, I mean, they're still a good defensive team, but they're 14th in the league in defensive rating at 109.2 points allowed per 100 possessions. Jimmy Butler is still a really good defender. I think he gets down and defends. Bam Adebayo is really athletic and such a unique player at the center position for Miami that they're trying to grow. They've got a lot of interesting defenders in like Derrick Jones Jr., who's an athletic defender, but this team still feels very unrefined. And I think there's a reason why. Even though Miami's ahead of Philadelphia in the standings, people are talking about Philadelphia as kind of the secret team that could become a contender because of this hiatus, because players get healthy, because maybe some of the tension gets eased from being apart for so long. Miami this year has really been more of an offensive team than a defensive team. They are a really strong 3-point shooting team. They take a fair amount of threes. They can hit threes. They got guys who can get in the paint, like Goran Dragic and Jimmy Butler, that require your attention. Bam Adebayo works really well in the high post as a passer. But between Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn, Tyler Hero, the Heat have found a lot of really solid 3-point shooters. And, Jay Crowder, we obviously talked about him too. They have a lot of really solid 3-point shooters. And they have these kind of defensive spurts where they are able to create turnovers, get out on the break. And that's where they hit you with the threes. That's where I think they really create their distance is from doing all that. The question is, and I think this is a question for every team, so this is not just a Miami issue, is are you going to be able to rely on shooting and 3-point shooting when the season resumes? Because again, nobody knows what kind of rhythm or chemistry anyone's in. Offense, I think, is going to be a little bit tougher, especially in the early parts of the seeding round. You go back and look at the lockouts in 2012 and 1999, 3-point shooting was way down compared to the year before and honestly the year after. It honestly took maybe a year or two for 3-point shooting to recover. So I think, it would not surprise me if we see a huge offensive downturn. And, like we kind of discussed with the Magic, that's going to put a lot of the focus on defense. And Miami's defense, all year hasn't been great. You know, I'd like to check what their post All-Star numbers were. But, you know, Miami is certainly a team that has kind of been a middling defensive team all year. And that's, you know, something that we don't really think about all the time when it comes to the Miami Heat.
Yeah. Yeah. You're always instilled as this hard-nosed defensive culture type of team. But I'm really interested in that stat that you brought up about the lockout season. So you said that the 3-point shooting was down, and how much was it down? Or do you have the stat you or no?
I don't have the stat on me. I remember looking it up, and you know, the 1999 lockout feels like it's its own world because it was so long ago. Players, I don't think, took the lockout seriously as far as staying ready to play. The NBA, I don't think, took it seriously about how quickly players could be ready to play. And that season was just a disaster. Like, every single stat you could have about that season, you should just kind of throw out because it was just such an anomaly. Shooting percentages throughout the league went down. Scoring throughout the league went down. It was just really, really bad basketball. The 2012 lockout, the lockout season, was better. It wasn't a complete, you know, kind of complete downturn, but I remember looking up, 3-point shooting was down from the previous season, and it was better but stayed lower the next year, and then slowly ramped back up to the levels that we're at now, where teams are just, you know, jacking up threes like it's no tomorrow. Offensive rating, like the median offensive rating, was down in both years, and it took a year or two for both to recover. So or to normalize and to get back to kind of an average level. So I am, the only thing that I think we can compare what we're going to experience here when games start at Disney is a lockout season where everyone's kind of been away from the team and away from playing basketball for so long. And even then, at least, you know, remember the summer of 2011, everyone, you know, you could go watch, you know, games on YouTube where they're dropping it at Rucker Park. You know, they're doing the Drew League. Guys were still playing. Guys were not playing in this lockout. They've gone, essentially all these players have gone 4 months without playing live basketball, unless they snuck it in somewhere. Right. And so I personally am pessimistic that the offenses are going to be good. I am expecting lower scores. You know, I think players are more prepared. I think, you know, not to say that players before weren't professional, but I think players taking care of their bodies and focusing on their basketball skills at a higher level than they did in the past. You know, I think players tend to treat it more like a job, a year round job, more than players may have in the past. And so I think in that sense, you know, there might be some saving grace, but I am really expecting some low scores. You know, some odd basketball to be played. Basketball is gonna be unpredictable for a little while. I am not expecting teams to come out of the gate, you know, drop at 120 every night. You know, I think 100 is going to be a target score for a lot of teams coming out of here. But that's just my gut feeling on this. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, nobody knows, but I like where you're going with that. I think that's very interesting. I think that's very valid. That point to watch. The other thing I want to before we get out of here, now that we've kind of transitioned to a broader than Miami spectrum, is essentially, you know, the philosophical question. I talked about this on my Atlantic Division Preview podcast with my guy Lior, and when we were speaking on Philadelphia, the idea that Philadelphia record wise is 29-2 at home, but then 10-24 on the road, you know, and that's a huge, massive difference. And what are these games? Are these home games? Are these road games? Are these neither? Like, what's the, what can we do to kind of evaluate what kind of situation we're in? Because it's so unprecedented. I mean, where do you fall in that line of thinking? Because that's just a question that there is no right or wrong answer. It's just, but there is some sort of answer to it, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to say. I did try and predict, you know, the games for the Magic at least. And, you know, like I said, I'm not expecting scores to be high. And I was doing the exercise more just to, you know, put something out there for traffic and to feed the content machine. Right. But, you know, as I was doing it, I was thinking like, man, I have no clue how any of these teams are going to play. Yeah. You know, the Magic, obviously, you know, I follow the Magic, so I'm going to use that as my perspective here. The Magic obviously need to win these games. You know, their most important game of the season against the Brooklyn Nets is their first game when they get into the campus setting. And, you know, how they play under that pressure with all the layoff and everything else is just a complete mystery to me. And I think every team is feeling the same way. You know, we're kind of using the 60 plus games that teams played, you know, through March as a reference, but honestly, I don't know how valuable that's going to be. I mean, sure, you know, I think Steve Clifford's even said this. Sure, you can watch teams for their tendencies. You know, teams aren't going to change things up too much, but those teams feel a lifetime away. I mean, we've had essentially an offseason between basketball games here. Those teams are so far in the past that we just don't know what it's going to look like. So, you know, I could sit here and say, I think the Magic, you know, the target or the goal or what I expect is for them to go 3-5. And if they go 4-4, I think they'll be in really good shape. But, you know, they've handled these teams that are under 500 really, really well. So they play Brooklyn, you know, Brooklyn, Sacramento, Brooklyn, New Orleans as the first two games and the last two games. They could go 4-0 in those games. They could go 0-4 in those games. And I have no clue what will happen. You know, they could go up against a team like Toronto, and maybe Toronto is pacing themselves through the seeding games because they're not as important to them. So maybe they've hit Toronto and that game doesn't matter to Toronto, and they catch Toronto, or, you know, they catch Boston for the same reason. Although Boston, I think, certainly does have something to fight for, Indiana just has a bad night and that's one of those eight games. Like it's really, really hard to get a handle on what this is going to look like, what this is going to feel, and how the players are going to react. So, you know, to your point, is this a home game? Is this a road game? I don't think that Philadelphia team exists anymore. So, you know, it's almost like a brand new team and a brand new season when we get started.
Yeah, man. And that's what makes this basketball so fun. Like, excuse me. I'm very much looking forward to the NBA returning just because it is so just – this is such a situation where there's just no precedent for it. So we're all coming in here blind. You and me, we're talking about, we spent, you know, 45 minutes now talking about what we think about where these teams have been, and it could all be proven wrong within the first 24 hours of the season restarting. That's just how crazy we're in. And that's what I'm looking forward to, man. Like it's gonna be fun basketball. It's gonna be unpredictable. And when it comes down to it, when we're, it's going to just be different. And I think there's a lot of beauty in that. And it's gonna be very entertaining to watch when it comes back.
Yeah, I mean we're certainly looking forward just to see basketball again. But, I am trying to temper my expectations on what the basketball, it'll be nice to have basketball,
it will look like.
Yeah. Will it be NBA level basketball? Hopefully by the finals it will be.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully by the finals, it might start out as like college level ball and work its way up, baby step its way up to back to NBA basketball. But all right, Philip, thank you for coming on the podcast, man. I greatly appreciate you as always here on this podcast. Glad to check in with you. Glad to see that you are doing well as Florida is one of the hot zones for the pandemic right now. So my thoughts are always with you, and I'm just really glad to see and hear that you're doing well. And I look forward to seeing what you and the Orlando Magic are doing. I'm looking forward to your content. I'm looking forward to seeing what the Orlando Magic do. Since the Pistons are out of the bubble, I can throw all my support your way. And I have, I don't have any biases coming into this restart now that the Pistons are out of it. So thank you for coming on this podcast, Philip. I greatly appreciate you.
No problem. Thanks for having me on as always, man.
All right, have a good one, and we'll be back talking about Orlando and seeing just how wrong we were in a couple weeks.